hours. Carla's wheeled chair was left outside the room. You can use that until we can arrange to have one built for you.
But you said I could airwalk.
She didn't want to be seen in a chair like that. Didn't want her sons thinking about the parts of her legs that weren't there. Satan gave her a dry look.
It's like anything else, Sylvia. There needs to be a balance between using craft to move around and using your body. The wheeled chair is practical.
He snarled softly as he came around to her side of the bed.
You were not a vain woman when you were alive. You are not going to become vain now that you're dead.
Her mouth was still hanging open, and her brain was still trying to think of a reply when he flung back the covers, picked her up, and took her into the bathroom. Ignoring the breakfast breads, ham, and fruit that had been set out for him and Lucivar, Damon poured himself a second cup of coffee and sat back.
"Let's begin with the simple and work up to the nasty," he said.
"Why is Sylvia glaring at me?"
Lucivar asked Satan.
"It was only a few drops of red added to the Yarbra. It's not like I opened a vein and poured ebon gray down her throat. I added a few drops to your glass, too, and you aren't acting bitchy about it." "I'm going to overlook that poor choice of words,"
Satan replied, giving Lucivar a look that said,
"Say another word, and I'll kick your ass. Prince Saadi, please report."
"As I told you last night, Michael is upset, but he's fine except for the bruises Tildy's teeth made on his arm. He and Tildy are staying with Tersa for the time being."
"I thought my father might want to take him,"
Sylvia said, her voice troubled. "Are you hoping he'll take them, or are you hoping someone will step in and prevent that arrangement?"
Damon wondered. Something wasn't right between grandfather and grandsons, but he wasn't going to wade into that family quarrel unless Janelle wanted him to.
"Right now, Michael has Tildy, Ledvarian, and Jarl protecting him. Your father might be willing to argue with two Shelties, but I don't think he'll want to deal with a tiger. So Michael stays with Tersa, since her response to finding Jarl in her parlor was to send Ledvarian out to buy more milk."
"And Beren?" Sylvia asked. Lucivar gave her that lazy, arrogant smile.
"He remembered more of his training than you did. But I guess I'll overlook that, since you're all weak and helpless now."
"The prick sure does know how to rile up women," Damon told Satan as they watched Sylvia change from wounded, vulnerable woman into a pissed-off queen. "Think she'll go for his balls?"
"I locked the wheels on her chair after I tasted the Yarbra,"
Satan replied.
"Beren is wounded," Damon said. "He'll need several days of rest and care to fully heal, but he will heal. He'll stay at the hall with us until this is settled. He'll be well protected there. Nothing will get past Kalis. Or me."
Sylvia looked at each of the men.
"Why so much protection? The trouble is in the southern part of Demlin, not in Halloway."
They had reached the nasty part of this report.
"We brought Hayes back to the hall last night. After talking with Renier this morning, I'm glad I made that choice."
Damon took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
"A warlord in Little Tyriel has been preying on young boys for the past few years. There is even a story whispered in schools near Goth about No Face, a warlord who tortures and kills boys who slip out at night instead of staying home as they should. No Face indulged in physical, sexual, and emotional torture, but Damon saw no reason to tell Sylvia what had been intended for her younger son."
"No Face."
Sylvia turned her hand, palm up, and stared at her fingers.
"He had some kind of mesh covering his face. I thought my fingers were ripped up by it when I was fighting him."
Satan cleared his throat.
"Nurian was able to heal your fingers before the flesh could no longer respond like it was still living."
"He broke his own rules in order to repair her body this much,"
Damon thought. He won't regret that decision, but he isn't comfortable with having made that choice. Some of No-Face's victims might have made the transition to Sildrudeath, but more likely, he used them up and made the final kill so there wouldn't be anyone to bear witness against him.
"Until now," Satan said too softly. "The Sildrudeath who have reached hell in the past few weeks."
He didn't glance at Sylvia, but Damon understood why his father chose not to continue.
"The last one was a boy from Demlin. Something I wanted to discuss with you, Damon."
"Was he mutilated?" Damon asked, on a black thread.
"Yes."
"No Face has either grown careless or too confident," Damon began.
"Or bored,"
Lucivar said, breaking in. Damon nodded. "Or bored. The bastard shifted his hunting ground to villages near the Demlin border. All of a sudden, village guards in Little Tyriel were paying attention and responding faster when a child disappeared. More of a challenge for him, and far more exciting."
"Then he made the mistake of straying over the border into Demlin."
Lucivar helped himself to one of the breakfast breads.
"He sees a brown-skinned child and forgets that the Demlin people are a long-lived race, and that child probably has lived as many years, or more, than him. That means the child is a little more mature in some ways than other children, and may not be as easy to grab. Combine that with an adolescent male who had the luck to become friends with the Queen of Halloway's son, and the bastard has more trouble than he's prepared to meet."
Hayes soaked in the weapons lessons Lucivar gave the boys and used his spending money to buy a knife. Damon said, "When the district queen makes some pointed inquiries, I suspect she'll discover more than one child has gone missing from that village before Hayes came to visit Beiren."
"He wanted to learn to protect himself,"
Satan said.
"More likely, to protect his younger brother," Lucivar said. "Like Beiren, Hayes is too old to be of interest to No Face."
Damon glanced at his father. The look in Satan's eyes was enough to confirm the age of the children who had reached hell.
"The invitation," Sylvia whispered. "The house party was a ruse to bring Michael within reach. Why lure a boy who lives in a distant village instead of hunting one within reach?"
"We think No Face blames your family for his death, and the inconvenience that comes with the physical death," Damon said. "Hayes' younger brother was the intended prey, but when No Face attacked, Hayes rushed in and managed to land a killing blow. Not an instant kill, since the boy was knocked out by a blast of power and his brother was taken, but he changed the battleground. No Face became demon dead.
People in the border villages are going to notice if a warlord from Little Tyriel no longer goes out during daylight or sits down for a meal," Lucivar said. "Whatever face the bastard hides behind that mesh is no longer going to go unnoticed, and people will start connecting him with the missing children."
"So his game was spoiled," Damon continued. "All because Hayes went to Halloway to visit Beiren."
"Why didn't Janelle's purge get rid of that monster?" Sylvia asked.
"That witch storm was over a decade ago," Satan said. "And it was unleashed to purge the realms of Dorothea's and Hecata's taint, not eliminate every person who is twisted in some way. If No Face comes from Little Tyriel, which sounds likely, he's from a short-lived race. He may have been young enough then to have avoided any kind of detection, or maybe his taste for this didn't develop until maturity, when he would have the physical strength to overpower his chosen prey. Maybe he was the one who started the story of No Face to begin with, or maybe something happened to him and he told it as a story at school, to hide the truth about a real predator. Do we care about why he kills boys?"
Lucivar asked. "I don't," Damon replied. "I just want to find him and put him in a deep grave."
Satan might be willing to wonder if a boy became a monster after being brutalized by one, but he had the duty to protect the people of Demlin. Until No Face was contained, he had no room for pity. Sylvia set the unfinished glass of Yarbra on a side table.
"He's going to come after my sons, isn't he?"
"We think so," Damon said. "It's another reason the boys are safer where they are. After making the transition to demon dead, No Face snatched a servant's child. The boy was violated and mutilated, and then sent to Hayes's family with the demand that they convince you to allow Baron and Michael to visit. Once he had Michael, he would return Hayes's brother unharmed."
"Revenge on me and mine because Hayes fought back," she said, "exchanging one child's life for another."
"Yes, but he didn't count on you and Tildy, that you would fight him and Tildy would be able to take Michael out of his reach. He didn't count on Baron charging in to attack." Damon paused. Baron ripped off the mesh and saw the enemy's face. He and Lucivar suspected that was why the healer had been destroying Baron's ability to communicate. From what Janelle had told him, the bitch had a little of the hourglass's skills, enough to strip Baron of even psychic communication by locking him within his own mind, which he would have done if Janelle hadn't intervened. A boy like that would be at the mercy of a predator. How many of the recent Sildru Diath had arrived in Hell in the same condition?
"Do you think Hayes's brother is still alive?" Sylvia asked.
"No," Damon replied. "But having seen the servant's child and believing their own boy was still alive, they decided to sacrifice your child instead, knowing what that bastard intended to do to Michael."
"They didn't have a choice," Sylvia said.
"Yes, they did." Damon's voice held a hint of ice.
"What choice?"
The fire in Sylvia's voice challenged the ice in his. "They could have gone to the district queen for help. Hayes's father could have gone to the queen's master of the guard if he didn't think the village guards would help him. Someone could have gone to the province queen or come to me when the first child in that village went missing. They had other choices, Sylvia, and the choice they made resulted in Baron being injured and you being killed." He shoved out of his chair. "Save your pity for someone who deserves it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a butcher to hunt." He walked out of the room, walked out of the keep, and caught the black winds that would take him home. Sylvia watched Lucivar fill up a plate with breakfast foods before wandering out of the room. He made it look casual, but it wasn't. She didn't think Satan had caught up with Damon before Saadi left the keep, but Yaslana was getting off the battlefield before the High Lord returned. Moments after Lucivar left, Satan came back into the room. He walked over to the table beside her wheeled chair, picked up her glass of Yarbra, and warmed it over a tongue of witchfire before handing it to her.
"Finish that," he said.
She bristled at the disapproving chill in his voice.
"I'm entitled to an opinion."
"And we're entitled to think you're being a soft-hearted ass for having that opinion," he snapped.
"You're not a mother."
"No, but I am a father, and I am the High Lord of Hell. I've seen that bastard's victim, Sylvia, and I gave mercy to some of them because they were so damaged that was the only thing I could do."
"Hayes's mother was just trying to save her son."
"He's dead,"
Satan roared.
"No Face was never going to give her back a living boy. He was dead before you arrived for that visit."
Sylvia shrank back in her chair, trembling.
"You can't be sure of that."
"Oh, but I am sure of that. And before you say Damon and I don't have a personal stake in your sons, I suggest you consider how our families are connected."
He walked out of the room, slamming the door behind him. She didn't need to consider or think. She knew all about the connections. When Janelle was 15 and had tried attending school with other children, Beiren had been her friend. Even now, when he was still an adolescent and she was a grown woman, married for more than a decade, they were still friends. And he told Janelle things he wouldn't think to tell anyone else. Michael spent as much time with Teresa as he did at home, and because of that, Damon was the adult male he had the most contact with outside of Sylvia's own first circle. Many years ago, her father had come to Holloway to find work and a wife. He'd found both, and he'd been enormously proud of his daughter, the Queen. He was a good man, and he loved her as much as she loved him. But their love had been strained by her love of another good man, because that man was the High Lord of Hell and the patriarch of the Saw Diablo family. Her father saw things one way, Satan saw things another. Neither was wrong, and both cared deeply for family. But it had scraped against her father's pride that her sons had found the Saw Diablo way of thinking more appealing, even though its rules and code of honor were more demanding. Having a man so old and powerful and lethal as her lover and her son's surrogate father had not sat well with the man who had raised her. Of course, he had thought the two consorts who had sired her sons were great fellows because they fit into the social circles that minor aristos like her father found comfortable. And she suspected he'd been behind the interest Michael's sire had been showing in his offspring recently. Damon and Janelle would make room for her father and brother because they were her family, but whether her blood relatives liked it or not, her sons had become absorbed into the Saw Diablo family, and the Saw Diablos took care of their own. She drained the glass of Yarbrough and set it aside. Then she pulled up the long skirt and looked at what remained of her legs. The Saw Diablos took care of their own. Would Satan have given anyone else a vial of Janelle's blood so that a healer could shape shattered bone and ripped flesh into clean stumps? Or heal her fingertips so that she could have full use of her hands? She knew enough about the restrictions he placed on the demon dead to understand that he'd bent many of his own rules to give her this much. If another woman had come to the keep asking for his help, most likely he would have summoned his sons or trusted demon dead warlords to save the children, and he would have provided the blood that would have given the woman enough sustenance to keep the self inside the flesh until she had the reassurance that her children were safe. What would have happened to her after that? Most likely, in a few days or weeks, that woman's power would have faded and she would have become a whisper in the darkness. Satan was realistic. He had to be. Hundreds of blood died every day. He couldn't take care of all of them personally. But he could, and did, protect the living from the dead. And wasn't that part of Satan's, and Damon's, anger? No Face was demon dead and was still hunting in a living realm, was hunting now in Demlin. Instead of recognizing the rage growing in two warlord princes, she had remained focused on another woman's fear as if it were her own, even though she knew that woman's choice would not have been hers. She would have gone to the district queen or the province queen or broken down the door at Saw Diablo Hall if that was what it took to get help. She wouldn't have sacrificed another woman's child, even at the cost of her own. Sylvia lowered the skirt and carefully arranged the folds. She was a spectator now, nothing more. As hard as it was to wait, she had to trust the living to take care of the living. Chapter 5. Beiren walked along Holloway's streets, looking into shop windows and wishing he'd brought along a few coins so he could suggest buying dishes of flavored ice. "I have money," Janelle said. He looked at her, long golden hair and sapphire eyes, wearing one of those peculiar outfits that were too big for her. Only 15 years old,
but her eyes were ancient.
15. You're older now, he told her.
I can be, she replied cheerfully, as she held up a silver mark.
It's your dream.
But at either age, I still have enough money for 2 bowls of flavored ice.
He laughed. It made his throat hurt enough that he really wanted that ice.
It's bad out there, he said. But you know that. You knew that before the rest of us did. There are also strong men out there who will defend and protect, she said. They won't let you come to harm.
I've seen his face.
Show me. Let him take shape here.
Baron shook his head.
If I show you, you'll be in danger too.
Something brushed against him. Muscle and fur hidden within a sight shield. More movement and soft sounds all around them.
We won't be the ones in danger,
Janelle said softly. The face of the enemy floated in the air before them.
He's rather pretty, isn't he?
She said.
You would never guess what was hidden under the skin. No matter. Now he doesn't have any masks to hide behind.
Baron opened his eyes. The room looked cloudy, and his ears felt plugged. His heart jumped when someone sat on the bed. He struggled to make his eyes work.
Don't push it, Janelle said on a psychic thread. Your vision and hearing will improve daily unless you disobey your healer, being me, and do something stupid, which will give you swollen balls.
Why?
He asked. Because I will kick them.
Of course she would. Janelle the healer didn't tolerate any nonsense or sass.
Can you sit up?
She asked.
I think so.
She helped him sit up, and being closer, helped clear his vision enough to know he was looking at Janelle as she was now, rather than the girl in the dream.
There.
She settled herself on the side of the bed and reached for the 2 bowls of flavored ice floating on air. She handed him one.
Raspberry, your favorite.
He grinned.
It's as if you knew I wanted some.
She grinned in return.
Imagine that.
A voice full of lightning and caverns and midnight skies floated through the darkness, winding its way through sleep and dreams.
We know your face, the voice whispered.
For most, whether they were demon dead or living, there was a kind of comfort in hearing the words, in being known by that voice.
We know your face.
But one man opened his eyes and shivered with fear, knowing his time was running out. Chapter 6. Damon tucked his hands in his trousers pockets, then remembering the gesture didn't belong to the boy whose face he now wore, he withdrew them and asked, How do I look? Tarsa studied him, looking confused in a way that worried him. The mundane world was a fragile thing for his mother, more like an illusion she could interact with than solid ground and living people. For Tarsa, the roads of the Twisted Kingdom were far more real.
You look shorter,
she finally said. Did she see the illusion Janelle had made? Or did she see right past the illusion to a memory of the boy he had been? Are you sleepy?
I am sleepy.
It is time for bed now. Damon looked at the shadow, the complex illusion that Janelle had made using Tildy as the template. Hush. The Sheltie looked at him, then she sneezed. Janelle talked to you about this, he said to Tarsa. Remember? I'm pretending to be Michael to catch the man who hurt Baron and Sylvia. Tarsa nodded.
Yes. You have to catch him so that the Michael boy can stay with me again.
That's right.
She frowned.
And I am supposed to pretend to be a weak female who is no threat to him.
Yes. He stepped up to her and took her hands. Darling, he is going to come here, to your cottage. When he does, don't get in his way. Let him come up here, to the Michael boy's room. I'll be here, pretending to be Michael, and I will deal with him. Do you understand?
She nodded. I will let him come up and see the Michael boy.
Are you sleepy? I am sleepy. It is time for bed now.
I'll warm up some milk for you,
Teresa said.
You shouldn't have a nut cake so late at night, but it's all right if it's a special treat.
She walked out of the bedroom.
Are you sleepy? I am sleepy. It is time for bed now.
Shut up, Damon growled. The Sheltie growled back. Rolling his eyes, he reached for the mind of the woman who meant more to him than anything else in the realms. If you had to stick me with a shadow Sheltie, did you have to make it so realistic? Her laughter rippled through the psychic thread.
Problem?
The dog is so damn bossy. If she bites me for not going to bed... More laughter.
I'm making a sacrifice, too.
And that would be...
It's winter. You're not here at night. My feet are cold.
He blinked. You're sleeping with a fuzzy 800-pound cat. Put your feet on him.
I do, but he whines about it. You don't.
Kalis came from Arceria, one of the northernmost territories, and lived in a den made out of snow. Why in the name of hell would he whine about Janelle's feet? He should be happy to have a cool spot, since he'd grown his winter coat and was staying in a room that was much too warm for him. Of course, sometimes Janelle's feet were breathtakingly cold during the deep part of winter.
Is everything all right there?
He asked.
Yes. Bayron is asleep and has Shuveen, Boyd, and Floyd with him.
Shuveen was sensible and would wake Janelle if Bayron needed a healer's help. Boyd and Floyd, on the other hand, were younger and pretty brainless most of the time. However, those two could make enough noise to wake the entire hall if a stranger walked into Bayron's room.
Get some sleep, love, he said. I'll see you in the morning.
The psychic thread faded.
Are you sleepy? I am sleepy. It is time for bed now.
Teresa is bringing up warm milk and nut cakes. We'll have our snack and then go to bed.
Snack?
The shadow wagged her tail. Ignoring the illusion that could fool the eye and, sometimes, even fool the sense of touch, Damon went to the window and studied the ground in Teresa's backyard. The snow was all churned up from the play of boy and dog, but he didn't think there were any fresh tracks.
Lucivar would know.
Janelle had taken Bayron's memory of his attacker and brought it into a tangled web of illusions. From there, she created a basic shadow, an illusion that was a stationary imitation of a person. An artist came from Amdar and made a sketch of the shadow, and that was taken to a printer. By the end of that first day, every village in the southern part of Demlin had a copy of that sketch, and Damon hadn't asked if some of those copies had found their way across the border to worried men in Little Tyrael. He had sent an official letter and a copy of the sketch to Little Tyrael's queen. She wasn't a personal friend of Janelle's, but his lady didn't consider her an enemy either. So he'd given the queen the courtesy of sharing the information they had, because there were families around Goth who were also grieving the loss of children.
We know your face.
Witch's voice had whispered through the darkness that first night. For the 3 nights since then, Damon had spent the hours between sunset and sunrise in Teresa's cottage, waiting, wrapped in a strong illusion that would make even a demon-dead predator's eyes see Michael, the chosen prey.
Are you sleepy? I am sleepy. It is time for bed now.
Damon sighed.
It could have been worse. If Janelle had made a shadow that had Tildy's real personality, he and the dog would be in a relentless argument about bedtime by now. And he'd be on the losing end of that argument, since the shadow wouldn't see past the illusion spell Janelle had created for him. "Snack?" the shadow asked. He turned away from the window, frowning. Why was it taking so long to warm up some milk?
Teresa carefully poured the warm milk into a mug and a small bowl. Her boy would make sure the Michael boy would be allowed to live with her. The tangled web she'd woven after Sylvia left the Living Realms had told her that much. The grandfather was a good man, and he had been a good father for the daughter. But he was not the right man for her sons. Lives would be soured, and the love that existed now would die if the grandfather took the sons. So the Michael boy and Tildy would live with her, and Beiren. Which knew best what to do for Beiren? She'd seen that, too, in her web. She rinsed out the pot and left it in the sink to wash later with the mug and bowl. As she turned to get the plate for the nut cake, she saw the stranger in her kitchen, standing close enough to touch. She shrank back, a response to the foulness of his psychic scent rather than fear of his physical presence. He grabbed her wrist, squeezing until she flinched in pain.
"Where is the boy?"
he snarled.
The boy? Wasn't he supposed to ask her about the Michael boy?
The boy is upstairs.
Show me.
He dragged her out of the kitchen and down the hallway. Then he released her wrist and gave her a hard shove toward the stairs.
Show me.
She had promised Witch that she would play out this game so that all the boys would be safe. But something wasn't right because this foulness was supposed to ask about the Michael boy, not her boy. Her boy would understand this confusion. He was playing Witch's game too.
Show me where he is,
the foulness whispered as it followed close behind her. Teresa climbed the stairs and led him to the bedroom where her boy waited. It took all the control Damon had to stand still when that bastard shoved Teresa into the bedroom. The shadow Sheltie began barking, but Janelle had deliberately left out any commands to attack.
You brat!
The warlord's voice sounded hoarse, as if his vocal cords had been damaged at some point and didn't heal correctly. Damon stepped back, drawing the warlord farther into the room and away from Teresa.
You brat! When I'm through with you, even your own brother won't recognize you.
Teresa jerked as if struck, but Damon didn't have time to wonder why, because the warlord lunged, his hand reaching for where a boy's arm would be. Instead of scrambling back, Damon stepped forward and clamped a hand around the warlord's wrist. As Janelle intended, contact with another male broke the illusion spell around Damon. The release of her power in the spell also broke the illusion around the warlord. Scars on the throat, hideous scars on the face, one cloudy eye. A monster had begotten a monster. As Damon looked into the man's clear eye, he felt a stir of pity. Enough pity that he decided it would be a swift execution, rather than the slow one a monster deserved.
You came to hurt the boy,
Teresa said, taking a step toward them. Damon glanced up and saw rage and a terrible kind of clarity in his mother's eyes.
It's done now.
You want to hurt my boy.
Teresa?
He was black-shielded. There was nothing the warlord could do to him, and nothing the man could do to break free of him. But Teresa might still get hurt, especially now that she was standing directly behind the bastard.
Janelle says it's like deboning chicken,
Teresa said in a sing-song voice.
Just hook two fingers around the spine and pull.
No time to say anything or do anything.
One moment the warlord was standing in front of him, caught in a bone-breaking grip. The next, he felt the sharp tingle of craft as the bones of hand and fingers passed under his grip. He tightened his hand to hold onto the man's wrist, but there was nothing but soft flesh, and the warlord's hand swelled like a sausage casing when it gets squeezed. Passing the bones through flesh and skin, Teresa whipped the skeleton free. Then Witchfire, fueled by her fury, took the bones, charring them black. For that moment, the blackened skeleton hung intact from her upraised arm. For that moment, the warlord stood there, his good eye filled with horror and disbelief. Then the bones rained down on the floor like black hailstones, and the muscles and organs collapsed in on themselves, contained by a shapeless sack of skin. Damon stood there, holding one wrist, too stunned to let go. The eyes lay on top of the fleshy sack, still staring at him. "He's demon dead, so he's still in there," Damon thought as his gorge rose.
"His self is still in there, and his mind is still aware."
Teresa dropped the spine on top of the rest of the bones and frowned.
"Chanel doesn't cook. Why would she know about deboning a chicken?"
Damon looked at his mother. Then he released his hold on the warlord's wrist and ran for the bathroom.
"I'm sorry," Damon stammered. "I didn't know what to do with it except bring it to you."
Satan stared at the skin sack filled with organs and muscles, and the brain. Damon had thought to put a bubble shield around the sack before bringing it to the keep. That was fortunate, because the contents were starting to drain from the orifices. Considering what the warlord had done to his victims, it shouldn't matter if the bastard heard them or not, but the man's mind had broken under the horror of the punishment, so Satan added an oral shield over Damon's bubble shield and then hid it all in a mist so that neither of them had to look at it.
"I've walked the realms for over 50,000 years, and I've never seen this before," he said as he walked over to the end of the courtyard where Damon stood. "He told Teresa to show him the boy, not the Michael boy."
Damon swallowed hard. To her mind, he threatened me, not the illusion.
"And she reacted."
Damon nodded.
"And Chanel told her how to do this?"
Another nod. His boy was looking glassy-eyed and green, which matched how he was feeling. The speed with which it happened and the grotesque result would have unsettled both of them under any circumstances, but the feral natures and the tempers of the women involved scared the shit out of him. No matter what she'd told Teresa, Chanel had not learned to do this by deboning a chicken. If the darkness was merciful, he would have never learned why or how his daughter had acquired this particular piece of craft, and he hoped with all his heart that Damon never learned why or how either.
"What do we do now?"
Linking his arm through Damon's, he led his son back into the keep.
"You're going to go home, take a sedative, and get some sleep."
"Maybe I should..."
"You're the Warlord Prince of Demlin, not the High Lord of Hell."
Satan put enough bite in his voice to clear the glassy look from Damon's eyes.
"You did your part in this, Prince. Now it's time for me to do mine."
"And your part is..."
"To sift through what is left of his mind for the names of his victims before releasing him to the final death. I'll send you the list. I'm sure you'll know how to quietly pass on the information to the people who need it."
"What happens after that?"
"He is demon dead,"
Satan said gently.
"After his self returns to the darkness, the meat will be left for the flora and fauna of hell."
Chapter 7. a week after No Face had been destroyed, Satan walked into the sitting room where Sylvia was reading and sat down in a ladder-backed chair next to her wheeled chair.
"It's time for us to talk,"
he said. She marked the page in her book and set it aside. She'd known this was coming, but she hadn't expected it to come this soon. Even with the heartache and worry about her sons, there had been comfort in his presence. She felt the drag of daylight as soon as the sun rose and went to bed to avoid the drain in her power. She would wake for a moment when he joined her later in the morning, and then sleep again, cradled in his arms, until they both rose at sunset.
"It's hard for the living to let go of the dead, and it's hard for the dead to let go of the living. That's why my rules about interaction between the living and the demon dead are so strict, and that's why I'm so harsh when those rules are broken. Did you live by your own rules, Satan?"
She knew the man, so she already guessed the answer.
"Everything has a price," he said softly. "When I became a guardian, I made a choice. It wasn't prudent to let some things, like Demlin Kalir, leave my control. But the personal things..."
He sighed.
"I never met Mephis's wife. I never knew his children. I never held them or played with them or read them stories. I straddled the line between living and dead, so I didn't belong with them. I had contact with Mephis only here at the keep. He was a grown man, and it was necessary because we were all waiting for the promised dream to become flesh. But I kept my distance from his family, asking no less of myself than I required of other citizens of hell."
"But you know Daemonar," she said.
He let out a pained laugh.
"Yes, well, Lucivar is not Mephis. When I gave Mephis an order, he obeyed it. When I give Lucivar an order, half the time he ignores it and pisses on my foot. When Daemonar was born, Lucivar told me he didn't give a damn about my rules. The boy was going to know his grandfather."
He paused, then added,
"And things changed after Janelle came into our lives. The boundaries didn't exist with the people she touched. That's why I know that while the rules I've set for the citizens of Hell must be strictly enforced most of the time, there can be exceptions."
She felt a zing that had nothing to do with her body and everything to do with her heart.
"I can see my boys one more time?"
"If that's what you want,"
he replied. He leaned forward and took her hands, rubbing his thumbs over her knuckles.
"Prince Saadi denied your father custody of your sons."
"Why?"
"For one thing, your father doesn't feel it's appropriate for the boys to see you anymore. You're dead. They need to accept that and rebuild their lives without you. Normally I would agree with him, but not this time. You're strong enough to let them go. And they will go, Sylvia. The day will come when they need you to be nothing more than a good memory. But for now, Daemon and I are willing to sanction, and chaperone, a visit twice a month here at the keep in Kalir. You, Baron, and Michael can spend the evening together. You'll have the reassurance that they're being taken care of."
"By whom?" she wondered. "Everything has a price."
"And this is no exception."
"What is your price, High Lord?"
"I want to show you something."
Using craft, he floated her above the chair. She straightened her legs so that her long skirt just brushed the floor. Linking her arm through his, she floated beside him as he made his way through the keep's corridors until they reached the dark altar. After he opened the gate, he led her to a landing web, wrapped a shield around her, and caught the black winds. When they dropped from the winds to another landing web, she looked around.
"This is Sa Diablo Hall, but it's..."
"In the Dark Realm. At one time, I ruled in all three realms,
so I built the hall in all three realms.
Mother Night.
She couldn't imagine what it had cost to build one of the halls, let alone three.
She'd expected the place to be empty.
It was a hive of activity. She saw caution in every eye when the demon dead spotted the High Lord, but there were also smiles and pleasantries. He held what was left of their lives in his hands, and they didn't forget that, just as he now held hers.
"Most of the demon dead remain near the gate, closest to where they lived," Satan said quietly. "Some go to specific territories that have been claimed by a particular group, like the Harpies or the Sildru Dyath, and some have unfinished business. The novel they never found time to write, or the dream of learning to paint that they gave up out of duty to family. Some want to learn to play a musical instrument. Unfinished business. Not with the living, with themselves. I provide a place for them to live, a modest amount of Yarbra for sustenance, and the materials they need. In turn, they take care of this place, and the stronger look after the weaker when it's needed."
"It's a community of artists," she said, wishing he would slow down so she could get a better look at the paintings. Some were hung out of kindness. Others were stunning and beautiful.
"This is what I wanted you to see."
He opened a door and guided her inside. The room was divided in half. There were scribbles and colored handprints and primitive drawings covering the set of folding panels that separated the room.
"It's less frustrating than trying to clean the walls all the time," Satan said.
Since he was clearly moving to keep them out of sight of whoever was on the other side of the panels, she stifled a laugh. "It's a pretty nice place," a young male voice said. "There are toys and games and lots of books to read for fun. There are also chores and studies, but those are interesting too. Some of the time." Sylvia smiled. That sounded so much like Michael. Satan slipped his arm out of hers. After making sure she was steady, he stepped back.
"Go ahead. Take a look," he said on a psychic thread.
Taking hold of the edge of the panel, she eased herself into a position to see the room. 30 children, if not more. None of them had reached adolescence, whatever their race. Among them was a Demlin boy, sitting on the floor, hugging a stuffed toy. Sylvia looked back at Satan.
"Is that Hayes's brother?" "Yes."
She listened for a minute as the boy in charge explained the rules everyone had to follow in order to be a resident of the hall. Pushing against the panel, she floated back to Satan.
"Who is the keeper of the rules?" "The first Sildru Dyath to choose to live here instead of on their island. Damon rescued him from the spooky house several years ago and brought him to me. In his way, he's made the same choice another Sildru Dyath made long ago, to be the leader of this band of children and help the others adjust and survive and let go when they're ready."
She caught something the boy said and looked more closely at the man.
"You can't help the ones who don't trust adults enough to accept help, but you help these children, don't you? You're the one who comes to read them stories, or listen to them, or give them a hug, aren't you?" "Some came from loving homes. Others never knew the comfort of a hug, not from a father or a mother."
"Everything has a price." Suddenly, she knew what he was asking of her in exchange for spending time with her own sons. To be a maternal presence for the children who had never known any. To help them with their unfinished business. To give them a sense of family. With him. Linking her arm with his, she tipped her head toward the door. He took them out of the room, then waited for her to indicate a direction. Instead, she just looked at him.
"I asked you once, and I understand better now why you gave me the answer you did," she said.
but everything has changed, so I'm going to ask again. Will you marry me, Satan?
She saw shock in his eyes, swiftly followed by joy, which was just as swiftly followed by caution.
Can you promise me that you won't stay one day longer than you truly want to?
He asked.
I promise you that.
Then I will be honored to be your husband for all the days that come before that day.
She threw her arms around him and held him as tightly as he held her.
What kind of wedding would you like?
He asked. She eased back enough to look at him.
A fast one.
Chapter 8. Sylvia had to wait a week for her wedding because Janelle wouldn't allow Baron to travel to the keep until every tiny part of his ears, eyes, and throat had healed completely. She chafed about the delay, but approved of the reason. The priestess from Riata came to the keep to perform the marriage ceremony. The food for the living guests had been provided by Mrs. Beale from the hall and Mary from the tavern. Sylvia's father and brother had been invited. They weren't able to smudge that line between the living and the dead and had refused to attend. But her sons were there, along with Marion and Lucivar, Daemonar, Jillian and Nurian, Tersa and Manny, Cyril and Renier, Damon and Janelle, and plenty of kindred who were also members of this pieced-together family. Satan slipped an arm around her waist and held out a raven glass goblet of Yarborough.
How are you doing, Lady Sylvia?
Accepting the goblet, she narrowed her eyes.
Michael and Daemonar are about to get into some mischief. They've got that look.
You think so?
He asked, laughing softly. The boys had barely taken a step before they were flanked by Shelties and blocked by Kalis. In that moment, Sylvia saw three male heads turn in that direction, Damon, Lucivar, and Renier. She pressed her lips together to keep from laughing aloud, since Michael looked so annoyed at having his fun stopped before it started. She took a sip of the Arbra, then handed back the goblet.
I appreciate the sentiment, and the dress is gorgeous. But Janelle shouldn't have harassed the dressmakers to get it made for the wedding.
The wedding ring, a square-cut ruby with flanking diamonds, had come from Bernard's shop. It wasn't custom-made like the dress, but it had been chosen with care.
My darling, Janelle would never harass a dressmaker or be as demanding about fit and style.
Sylvia brushed a hand over the rich red fabric.
Then who?
Damon, however, makes up for being demanding by knowing exactly what he wants and being a very generous patron of some of Amdar's more exclusive establishments.
She felt the room tip a little when she considered the rest of the wedding gift.
The lingerie? Janelle or Cyril chose that, didn't they?
Satan just looked at her.
Oh, hell's fire.
Has it occurred to you that Damon and Lucivar are now your stepsons?
Don't threaten me on my wedding day, Saw Diablo.
He burst out laughing. A minute later, Janelle came up to them and gave Sylvia a bright smile that would have scared her right down to her toes if she'd still had any.
I need to borrow your wife,
Janelle told Satan.
Lady Sylvia and I need to have a little chat.
Chapter 9. Damon picked up the first letter from the thick stack on his desk and swore softly. The swearing became more vigorous and creative as he worked his way through the stack. By the time Renier walked into the study to go over the week's assignments, Damon was one wrong word away from exploding.
"What in the name of hell are these?"
he roared, dropping the letters on the Blackwood desk. Renier winced. "Ah,
I was hoping to get here before you saw those.
And they are?
Just what they seem. Offers from district queens all around Demlin to become the new queen of Halloway, and the same offer from a few young queens from other territories.
I know who rules in my territory, Rainier.
Some of these women rule towns or cities that are larger and more profitable than a small village, and others already rule a handful of villages. They're going to give up that income to rule Halloway? Rainier looked uncomfortable. You read the letters? Of course you did.
So I know that the letters addressed to the province queen, of which there are few, are sincere offers to add Halloway to the villages under the lady's rule, because every village needs to be held by someone.
But most of these... He stopped. Even after more than a decade of marriage, he still felt the raw fury of a vulnerable man whose reputation could be compromised. But that was his state of mind, and he had no right to whip Rainier with that fury. "Why did we get these at all?" he asked through gritted teeth. "Shouldn't a committee from the village or the province queen sort through these and present me with a short list for final approval?"
"Normally it would be done that way," Rainier said. "But, Prince, your reaction to these letters, and they are only letters, is exactly why no one else is willing to make a choice."
"No one wants to be held responsible for whatever queen ends up living on your doorstep, especially if she proves to be too friendly a neighbor." Damon took in a deep breath and blew it out. "If I were you, I would put those aside," Rainier said. "When I spoke with Sylvia's first circle yesterday, they said they had been talking to a particular lady about becoming Halloway's queen and were hopeful that she would accept. She's supposed to give them her answer today."
"She's one of these?"
He pointed to the stack of letters. "I don't know, but judging by how much care they are taking in whatever they said, they want this particular queen."
"If they feel that strongly, I'll certainly make an effort not to interfere, as long as the lady doesn't think ruling Halloway means having access to my bed,"
Damon said as the study door opened and Janelle walked in.
"That might be a problem," she said cheerfully. "Rainier, the prince and I need to talk."
Rainier looked at her, then at Damon, and limped out of the room as fast as he could, closing the door behind him. Janelle settled in the visitor's chair and smiled at Damon.
"Sit down, Prince."
His stomach clenched, but he obeyed.
"Sylvia's first circle asked me to take her place as the Queen of Halloway," Janelle said. "This morning I accepted and signed a 5-year contract."
Damon's jaw dropped.
"But you don't want to rule. I don't know how many times I've heard you say that over the years."
She looked embarrassed.
"Apparently what I say and what I do are not the same things, and I've been the only one who hasn't noticed that."
"No shit. Who was the fool who told her?"
"Ledvarian says that Shelties and Queens are meant to herd. It is our nature, and denying our nature is foolish. When I ruled Kalir, that was a heavy burden, even with all the other queens to help me. And after I was hurt, it took me a long time to heal, and my becoming well was the most important thing. And I had a mate, and it was also important that I spend a lot of time with him and play. But now it's time for me to work again, and officially ruling the small village right next to my home won't be much different from what I already do. Or so says the Sheltie."
He couldn't think of one thing he dared to say.
"As much as I'd like to kick his furry ass for what he said, Ledvarian was right. It's time for me to have my own flock again."
"A new court?"
he asked. She shook her head.
"Sylvia's first circle doesn't belong to me in the truest sense, but they're good men who are committed to Halloway and will work well together to take care of the village and its people."
She hesitated.
"And they're willing to accommodate the things Sylvia and I want from Michael and Beiren.
Ah, now he was hearing a reason that made sense. Then he remembered.